Muito bom dia.
Very good morning to you all. Vice President of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, Special Representative of the Secretary General of the Council of Europe on Migration and Refugees, speakers, ladies and gentlemen, MPs, Portugal joined the Council of Europe in 1976, a few months after the Constitution came into force, having founded our democratic regime, and it has been a dedicated and hard-working member of the Council of Europe since then, also hard-working member of the Parliamentary Assembly. And so we are greatly honoured, very pleased to welcome you in the Portuguese Parliament. This is a very important initiative for all member states and for Portugal in particular. Throughout its history, we have been a country of migrants, and we have a lot of our own citizens living abroad. It's not possible to think about Europe without thinking about diasporas. Our diasporas took European culture to other continents and helped forge new states on other continents. This was the case in Brazil, in Africa, and Timor. This was the case also for other European states across the world. And I'm not just talking about former colonial empires. When we think about well-being and social models, Europe and the European Union has been a source of hope for many who search for a better life, fleeing misery, fleeing war, challenging pain and death, creating communities that have developed, transforming into diasporas. These are not just extra community diasporas, they are also inter-union and part and parcel of the freedoms of the European Union. And so it is not surprising that Portugal should be concerned about Brexit negotiations. We believe there to be fundamental principles that need to be respected. When we talk about diaspora, we have to use the plural. Diasporas are not static. They're in flux. They incorporate different realities. They have different causes. They occur differently over time. They have different typologies at the root. We have to think of dissemination when we think about the word diaspora. We're talking initially about forced movement of people. Today, it's a wider range of situations. There are different ideas underpinning diaspora, the idea of identity and belonging to a country of origin as individuals and communities, integration into host countries in the first generation and following generations leads to the building of new identities where collective memory coexists alongside local reality, a local reality in which they integrate. Associations also develop and become rich across generations, create new networks for diasporas, structure relationships between individuals with the home countries, create relationships among individuals in these new societies. There is learning, the learning of a new language, acculturation, integration, acceptance on the part of those that are welcoming to them. There is mobility, spatial but also social mobility, as people seek a better life, hope for a better life. We're all aware of a generation that is looking for work, searching for more capital gain. They help promote material progress. Very often we're talking about unqualified immigration, integration, people seeking more qualified jobs and education is very important in all this. Secondary education, higher education, this is one of the challenges for those who travel to seek a better life, but also important for those who are welcoming. Exclusion and isolation are terrible things. History has taught us the dangers of racism and xenophobia. And so it is not surprising that we should condemn the violence of white supremacists in Virginia as well as in other states of the United States. Europe, of course, can improve on many fronts, fighting xenophobia. And xenophobia that is often fed by radical discourse hiding under anti-European nationalist disguise. Diasporas are more than population movements. They allow for cultural enrichment. They allow for plurality in host countries and those that welcome immigrants as well. We also need to focus on the second generations, those who still feel links to host countries, but also to their new homes. These are all elements that are part and parcel of our diasporas. They are non-static. We're always aware of the impact of air transportation over the last few decades. Distances have been shortened. This has caused profound changes in the lives of migrant communities, allowing them to continue to maintain their ties with their countries of origin. It has helped improve our knowledge society. It has helped develop networks of communication. With the internet, we have moved on from postal services. People are able to see each other, to speak at the same time that they see. And this has allowed for information to circulate through virtual communities. But migratory flows have also changed. Think about Portugal, for example. Initially, lots of Portuguese went to Brazil. Today, it is also the country of origin of the largest immigrant foreign community that has set up resident in Portugal. We also see a lot of qualified workers seeking to go abroad. This happened in the case of the Portuguese after the crisis in 2008 and 2009, which greatly impacted this country. We also see more and more people being welcomed by certain states who want these highly qualified immigrants. But we have to be careful because it may result in brain drain, especially for less developed countries. In order for brains to move in a positive way, we need everyone, countries of origin and countries of residence, to benefit on an equal footing from mobility. We mustn't forget demographic aging either. The countries that lose population, the countries of origin suffer, but also those that welcome them, the countries of residence, may feel the impacts of aging over time, and there may be economic and social consequences to this as fertility decreases in their own countries. But it's not just negative impacts that we see. There are positive impacts. Migrants take with them a positive view of their own countries to countries of residence. There is the issue of remittances, technological knowledge, cultures that mingle and mix, the potential for business projects to develop. There are qualified professionals that move. 90% of qualified immigrants, we believe, now reside in OECD member states. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks to the launch of the Parliamentary Network on Diaspora Policies, the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe bears witness to its vitality and its dedication to the aims at the heart of the Council of Europe. In 2004, the Permanent Committee of the Parliamentary Committee adopted a recommendation on the cultures of the diaspora. And the North-South Centre of the Council of Europe has also done a lot of meritorious work in this field. And so I hope that this new initiative will be a productive one. I hope that the parliamentary network will be able to help us better understand this very complex reality. Welcome to Lisbon. Welcome to Portugal. I wish you all the best in your work. Thank you.
Monsieur le Président de
Distinguished Speaker of the Parliament of Portugal, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, it's a great honor for me to speak at this opening session of the conference together with Mr. Speaker, a conference focused on launching a parliamentary network on diaspora policies. First, on behalf of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, I would like to thank the Portuguese authorities as well as the Parliament of Portugal for the excellent arrangements and the very warm welcome extended to us. I'd also like to commend Portugal for its political commitment and support to this initiative. I'd also like to congratulate our colleagues, members of the Assembly who instigated this project, and more specifically, Mr. Andrea Rigoni, chairperson of the subcommittee on cooperation with non-European countries of origin and transition, as well as rapporteur on a number of different issues relating to the role of diasporas. Ladies and gentlemen, according to data from the International Organization for Migrations, by the end of 2015, the total number of migrants worldwide exceeded 1 billion persons or people, that is to say more than one-seventh of the global population. Most of these persons are displaced within their countries. However, international migrations still do account for some 244 million persons, or their and this was the case in 2015 date of the study. The figures have evolved since. However, the trend remains very much the same. Migration and migratory flows are very much part of our daily lives. The European continent is particularly affected by this phenomenon. According to OECD studies, 5 million persons have settled permanently in 2016 in the 35 member states of the OECD, most of these countries being European. These migratory flows continue to be very much affected by the refugee crisis affecting both shores of the Mediterranean. Unfortunately, this crisis is far from over. These migratory flows, of course, bring about a number of challenges and opportunities for Europe. However, the absence of a coordinated migration policy in Europe has fueled the rise of irrational fears in European societies. And these fears were subsequently utilized by politicians and the media, which presented negative images of migration presented as a threat. And this negative portrayal of migration is very worrisome. It not only promotes xenophobic and nationalistic and populistic discourses, which are completely incompatible with the values that we hold dear, but it also contributes to skewing the demographic and economic realities of our countries. In our most recent report on migration as an opportunity to be seized in Europe, we noted that there was a discrepancy between the reality of the economic and demographic situation in Europe on the one hand and the negative perceptions of migrations on the other. The scarcity of labor force in a number of different sectors, of which agriculture, building, hotel and hospitality industries, hospitals, as well as the aging of the population are all factors that call for a change in our perspective and that to demonstrate, in fact, that migration could be very beneficial to Europe, giving increasing needs for labor force. These we are seeing an increasing variety in countries of origin of these migrants, and thanks to privileged relationships with countries of origin, diaspora communities contribute to better relations with these countries of origin. It's also important to note the contribution of these migrants to the economic development of their countries of origin through the creation of companies, remittances, as well as a contribution of know-how and expertise. These communities as well promote educational and cultural exchange and contribute to the creation of a multicultural, multilingual environment in both their countries of origin and host countries. In light of my own personal political experience, I can say that I know very well the advantages of this win-win approach. For 24 years, I headed the city of Alfort, or the town of Alfort, a town of 45,000 inhabitants in the greater Paris region. And my town has a very rich history in integration policies and integration policies working with diaspora communities. And I'd like, in fact, to greet Carlos, who, at the time I was mayor, worked very closely together with the Portuguese communities in my town, which very large communities, as well as with a number of other communities in the town. No, sorry. Sorry, I got distracted. I was saying that civil society organizations and diaspora organizations have always played a very important role in this process. And I wanted to add this little parenthesis about my own personal experience as mayor, which was highly enriching to me. But, of course, we need to recognize that there still are a number of obstacles preventing us from drawing the best of the advantages or benefits brought about by these migratory flows. A number of factors need to be taken into account. For instance, the access of migrants to the labor market. And in this particular area, migrants, in fact, are faced with a number of legal and administrative obstacles, preventing them from effectively integrating the European labor markets and making them vulnerable prey to discrimination and exclusion. Another important factor is the integration of these migrants in their host societies and their participation in the social and political life of these countries. There's still much room for progress in these areas. In order to address these challenges, our Assembly has set forth a number of very tangible recommendations which our member states could implement in order, for instance, to improve national legislation aimed at facilitating migrants' access to the labor force, to create also more inclusive society, a society in which migrants can play a full role in and can contribute fully in all aspects of life. So these recommendations are listed in recommendation 2198 of 2014, and during our conference we will focus on four key areas, that is to say the democratic participation of the diaspora, impact of diaspora on the development of countries of origin, promotion of intercultural dialogue, the role of diaspora in the construction of inclusive societies. These four key areas could in fact become four key areas of development or of work for our future network. And I very much look forward to the preparations as well as the discussions giving way to our future network. I'm delighted to meet with you here today because I am convinced that these migration movements are excellent opportunities to make our societies more resilient and better capable of meeting the challenges of our societies today. We need a win-win cooperation between countries of origin and host countries. We want a cooperation between national, local, and international players as well as civil societies. The future parliamentary network on diaspora policies In fact, is an institutional platform that will enable us to exchange our experience and experiences, and I hope that it will very quickly become an international center of expertise on diaspora. And, of course, the experiences of the Council of Europe, as well as the experiences of various member states, will contribute to this effort. Thank you very much for your attention.
Merci, Monsieur René.
Thank you very much, Mr. René Rouquet, Vice President of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe.
I will now give the floor to the Special Representative of the Secretary General of the Council of Europe on Migration and Refugees, Mr. Thomas Boček. You have the floor.
Mr. President of the Parliament of Portugal, Mr. Vice President of the Parliamentary Assembly, Mr. Director General of the International Organization for Migration, dear members of national parliaments, ladies and gentlemen, over the 70 years since the end of the Second World War, migration has steadily increased across the European continent. A number have migrated within Europe, while others have come to Europe from third countries. Some arrived as refugees, others left their home countries in search of better opportunities abroad. Regardless of the reason for their migration, many retain strong links with their homelands and a continuing interest in political, cultural, and societal developments there. Advances in technology have greatly facilitated the maintenance of such links. Countries of origin and of destination are growing, increasingly aware of what diasporas have to offer. As it has been already mentioned, home countries benefit from remittances sent to family by workers abroad and from the wider opportunities for investment and growth created by its nationals overseas. Host countries reap the rewards of diversity and the rejuvenation of workforces but motivated immigrants seeking to improve their lives. At the same time, the presence of large diasporas can cause tension within communities. Racial hatred and prejudice can lead to incidents of hate crime and violence. Diasporas can also be a source of tension in relations between home and destination states. Governments of the home country may encourage their nationals abroad to act or to vote in a way that coincides with national interests to the frustration of host country governments. Rights and freedoms accorded to migrants in destination countries, including in particular freedom of expression, may vex home countries' governments as attention is drawn to internal issues by nationals protesting abroad. Diaspora populations also have particular interests and needs of their own, which require promotion and protection. The opportunity to participate in political life in their home countries, host countries, or both. Protection against prejudice and discrimination on grounds of their national or ethnic origin. The possibility to access education, employment, and healthcare. The right to use and to teach their children their national languages. The freedom to continue their traditions and to practice their religions. A lack of opportunities and the failure of integration policies can leave members of diasporas isolated, impoverished, and vulnerable to radicalization. The challenge for Council of Europe member states is how to promote the integration of diasporas in their host countries by allowing them also to preserve their links with their countries of origin. Council of Europe standards and activities can provide assistance in meeting this challenge. Mr. Rouquet has already explained the important work being done by the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe to ensure recognition and respect for the rights of diasporas. In particular, PACE recommendations and resolutions have underlined the importance of the political participation of migrants. The European Convention on Human Rights applies to all those within the territories of Council of Europe member states. The rights it enshrines must be guaranteed without distinction on grounds of national origin. These rights include the right to freedom of expression and the freedom of religion. The first protocol to the Convention includes the right to education and the right to participate in elections. Of course, these rights are not absolute, and states may limit than for good cause. However, those imposing restrictions on rights enjoyed by diasporas may be called on to justify the restrictions before the European Court of Human Rights. The Convention is therefore an important tool to protect diasporas from discrimination and to allow them to press for the recognition of rights they deem necessary to further their interests. The European Commission Against Racism and Intolerance, ECRIT, monitors discrimination, violence and prejudice against all those present on Council of Europe states' territories. Since diaspora are often a target of such treatment, ECRI's work is of particular relevance to them. ECRI produces reports and recommendations to member states on how to tackle the specific issues it identifies in the course of its country monitoring activities. Its general policy recommendations address thematic issues in relation to racism and intolerance. They are key to informing integration policies and initiatives. The Council of Europe Intercultural Cities Network can also help cities to develop comprehensive intercultural strategies and thus harness the many benefits diversity can bring. Various other Council of Europe instruments, such as the European Social Charter, the Framework Convention for the Protection of National Minorities, and the European Charter for Minority or Regional Languages, have an important role to play. The Framework Convention, for example, aims to promote the equality of all those belonging to minorities and their rights to express, preserve, and develop their culture, religion, language, and traditions. While all of these bodies and instruments are clearly relevant for diasporas in Europe, none has diasporas as its particular focus. This new initiative establishing a parliamentary network on diaspora policies is therefore a timely one to enable states and diasporas to come together and exchange ideas and examples of best practices in this area. Policies for diasporas are sorely needed. The expertise of the Council of Europe, together with national parliamentarians and diaspora associations, can, and I'm sure they will help, to ensure that new policies promote the inclusion of diasporas in host societies while protecting the right to be different. I wish you a successful and fruitful conference. I'm looking forward to cooperating with the new network because I really feel there is a huge potential in it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Special Representative of the Secretary General of the Council of Europe on Migration and Refugees, Mr. Thomas Boczek. We're now going to pause for a few minutes because we have come to the end of our opening session. And we will continue in a few minutes, as I was saying. I wish you all the best in your work the next 2 days. Thank you.
Bien, mesdames, messieurs.
Very well, ladies and gentlemen, we will be resuming. And I will straight away move into the session about the diaspora contribution to European societies. I'll give the floor to Mr. William Lacey Swing, Director General of the International Organization for Migration. You have the floor, sir.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Special Representative, Your Excellencies, members of the parliaments of your various countries, distinguished representatives of the diaspora groups, distinguished participants, ladies and gentlemen. Such an honor. I'm very humbled by the invitation to be with you this morning, and very encouraged by the theme that you have chosen, that you're looking at diaspora and the contributions that they can make. I'm especially to have this opportunity to meet with parliamentarians. We don't spend enough time with parliament members. I'm speaking of those of us in the United Nations and other international organizations. We spend far too little time with mayors who have to provide the shelter, the jobs, the security, and we spend far too little time with our NGO partners. I want to congratulate you on choosing this theme and launching this parliamentary network, which can be so important, as my colleague just said. Now, has already been very clearly stated by the Vice President, we are living in a world on the move. We're living in a world of unprecedented global human mobility. We had the figures already from the Vice President, 1 in 7, 1 billion of our 7 billion world. If you took just the international migrants of 244 million to which he referred, this would give you a population slightly smaller than Indonesia, slightly larger than that of Brazil. They would have a gross domestic product roughly that of a small to medium-sized member state of the European Union. This is a global trend of our time. It will not go away. I've just returned from Niger and Libya. The median age in Niger is 14. The median age in Germany is 49. You don't have to be a PhD to understand the pull and the push factors here. The other drivers, of course, in addition to demographic imbalances, are those of disasters. We're looking at a disaster now in the hurricane season in the Caribbean. But we also have human-made disasters. We have 9 simultaneous armed conflicts from the western bulge of Africa to the Himalayas, with absolutely no hope in sight to solve any of them in the short to medium term. I hope I'm proved wrong, but I believe that to be the case. These are all factors that will push more people out. The vast majority of migrants are migrating in a very regular, peaceful, orderly fashion. But there are at least 66 million who are being forced to move, and that is a record in modern times. Distance shrinking technology, 300 million people connected to the Internet in 2000. Today, it's heading toward 4 billion. If Mark Zuckerberg gets his way, it'll probably be 7 billion. We have distance shrinking technology. I'm going back on one of the budget airlines this evening. You can get anywhere quickly, cheaply. So all of these are factors. Now, we have more and more people, therefore, connected to more than one country. Excuse me for a personal reference. My family is split on 4 continents. I just came back from Cape Town for the marriage of my granddaughter, product of a marriage, my son who fell in love with Cape Town and a local girl when I was ambassador to South Africa during the period of Mr. Mandela's liberation, and now we see that they are still in Cape Town. My wife is from Malaysia, where we have a home. My daughter's in Afghanistan. Her 12-year-old son is living with a maid from West Africa in Manhattan. Now, I say that simply to say that this is becoming much more the norm than the exception, although mine, I admit, is somewhat of an extreme case. We have more family ties increasingly extending across borders. We have more people with dual nationalities. My granddaughter has 3. Others have as many. So diaspora then offer us a chance to have a sense of belonging to more than one country. And there is absolutely no contradiction in being fully integrated into your host society and very active back home as a member of an active diaspora group. So I think these are very exciting times. I have myself now, at my advanced age, I've lived more outside of the United States than inside. I'm just as American as ever, but I've also had the riches of experiences in three or four continents, including 30 years in Africa. So let me move quickly to say, I get started, so I'm not going to get carried away. This is just the introduction, but I wanted a few more things before I go to my main points. We've mentioned, and it's very hard to follow these three speakers, I think, who gave us an excellent setting for our discussions. I wish that I could have authored their speeches myself, because they're very good and very helpful. We have economic capital. We've talked about savings, investments, trade. But we have what I talked about already, $600 billion a year in remittances going home, larger than twice as much as all foreign aid, and nearly as much, roughly as much, as all total foreign direct investment. I'll say something later about how we have to improve on how that money is transferred and cut down the costs of transferring it. We have human and social capital, the skills, the knowledge, the motivation, the drive in areas such as health. Now, the common stereotype about migrants is they come here to take advantage of our free social services, public services. That may well be true, but ask ourselves another question. Do we want unhealthy migrants in our community, want unhealthy communities, or do we want to give them access to health facilities? Do we want migrant brats running around, or do we want migrant children who will grow up to make a contribution? So there are several ways to look at it. Cultural capital, as mentioned already by several of my colleagues here, the rich and diverse backgrounds, creating more dynamic and more innovative societies. So more and more governments are beginning to create policies and institutions to address the question of diaspora. Because if you ask me, I would say that the diaspora are the single most neglected aspect of most governments' immigration policies, because it's a rich resource, and we are not capitalizing on it. Over the years, more and more governments have created ministers of the diaspora. I know in Rabat there's a Ministère des Marocains à l'étranger. I convened a conference in 2013 in Geneva. We had 35 governments who sent ministers of diaspora to that. They were brand new then. There are even more today, and I think that is the way to go. So the New York Declaration that was announced last September shows you that migrants are now recognized as the quintessential agents of development. Now, that was my overly long introduction. I had three main points I wanted to make today. And I like alliteration. It's easy to remember. The three E's: to engage the diaspora, to enable the diaspora, and to help empower the diaspora. Under engagement, I would say it means reaching out to them. In countries of origin, networks that connect with returning members of transnational communities, including investors, skilled workers, teachers, professors. Some may come back only for a short vacation period to teach or to work at a local hospital. Countries of destination, we need to maintain outreach through our embassies and consulates, trained labor attachés, and others. No other country looks after its overseas nationals better than the Republic of the Philippines. No Philippine ambassador can survive if they don't make protection of the Philippine nationals abroad their number one priority in their mandate. More of us should probably follow in that direction there. We believe also that we can engage the diaspora in making we can make provision in our constitutions and our electoral laws, and I know some European countries have done this, to allow for several seats in the parliament for the diaspora representatives, to give them a sense that they still belong at home, they're appreciated, and they have a political role to play. Second point, to enable. Transnational communities can contribute to development to the extent to which they can acquire the necessary skills and resources. There are a number of ways to do this: guaranteeing access to essential public services, ensuring respect for their human rights in return for diaspora's respect for local laws and customs. It's a two-way street. Changing the narrative. I guess the main reason I'm pleased about the theme you've chosen is that if we're going to change the public narrative about migration, which is right now toxic, it is very poisonous, migration has come to mean, become a dirty word. And we need to come back to an historically more accurate reading of migration, which is that migration has always been historically a positive factor in life. If all of the current day migrants in New York City were to leave tomorrow and form their own city, it would be the third largest city in the United States. So they're making contributions. We are working to change that narrative to protect migrants and to allow them to make the contribution they want to make. We're working with governments in several ways to reduce the social and financial costs of migration. For example, ethical labor recruitment. We've got a program called International Recruitment, International Standards for Recruitment of Migrants. There are many corrupt and criminal migrant recruitment agencies. Take a young woman, say we're going to get you a job in X, Y, or Z country as a domestic. They get there, the passport is taken away, and they go into a brothel. A young man goes to work thinking he's going to earn good money, and the first year of the salary goes back to the migration agency. Migrants should pay nothing for recruitment. It should be the company that's hiring them who pays for it, if there is a payment. Secondly, we need to reduce the costs of transferring money home. It's particularly egregious in Africa, where it can be 10 to 15% of your hard-earned money just to get the money home. We have a project, IOM, with the Universal Postal Union in Bern, Switzerland, to use the Postal Service to send money home at virtually below 5%, preferably below 3%. We want to integrate migration and national development policies. Now, it's quite clear that we're going to fail if we don't have effective integration policies in countries of destination to ensure adaptation quickly to the environment and the new area, the new economy. We need support for the migrants to access new knowledge, language, skills, and capital, and to foster social inclusion and avoid marginalization. Most of the terrorist attacks that have occurred recently, Paris, Nice, Brussels, San Bernardino, California, Orlando, Florida, have all been homegrown. They are the results of failed integration. So we need to wake up and recognize that if you marginalize people, they're not only not able to contribute, they may turn to doing things that are harmful to us. Third point, we need to help to empower migrants, opening up opportunities and capacities for them to establish their own action plans and priorities. And we've supported governments in several ways to do this. We have facilitated trade and investment missions to bring diaspora back to their country of origin, to learn what's going on and to see what the trade and investment possibilities are. We piloted an innovative project between Moroccan authorities and Belgian financial institutions to try to facilitate direct investment. In Georgia, we are facilitating access to funding for diaspora-led businesses, a dedicated portal that will provide information on investment opportunities. But we're also trying to facilitate mobilization of skills, knowledge, and expertise. Moldova, we have something called Diaspora Excellent Groups Program, just launched in May of this year, to target highly qualified citizens who've been resident for at least 2 years abroad and who want to work with representatives of government to support policy development. Connecting Diasporas for Development, a program in the Netherlands, links professional diaspora members in the Netherlands to institutions in their countries of origin. I spoke to a diaspora group a year ago in The Hague, 300,000 Surinamese residents in the Netherlands. I only had 250 on that day, but still, it was an opportunity to talk to them about trying to help back home to develop Suriname. NGOs can also be very helpful in times of crisis, the diaspora groups I'm thinking of. A year ago, 120,000 Ethiopians were expelled from the Gulf area. We were asked to try to help them find footing back home where there were no jobs, which is why they left. We received hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Ethiopian diaspora groups in the U.S. So they come forward in times of crisis. And finally, we need to do financial literacy training and do information on remittance services. We're trying to come up this year with something called the MeGap, which will be an app just for migrants to get basic information. So this is some of the ways in which we can help. Let me leave you with two thoughts. A study that's just been published by one of our main partners, the McKinsey Global Institute, gives you this statistic. For the past 40 years, the number of actual international migrants hasn't changed that much. It's still about 3.5% of the world's population. But the study shows they produce 9% of global GDP, which is 4% more than they would have produced if they had stayed home. That should be a fairly telling statistic if we got the right policies. And then final thought, it's as old as humankind, migration, but it is not a problem to be solved. It is a human reality that needs to be managed, and we're the ones to do it responsibly and humanely. And that's what this conference is all about. Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup, monsieur.
Thank you very much, Mr. Director General. I already have a list of the speakers. Of course, we can add to it. Our first speaker is Mrs. Monkazar, president of the Platform of Women Diaspora Members from Togo, based in Belgium. You have the floor, madam. Thank you, Chair. I would like to seize this opportunity to present a book which reflects the experience of 129 women diaspora members from Togo in Belgium speaking about their own experiences. Some 77 of these women have also written texts or produced pictures portraying their activities within their association. So this is the cover of the book, which will be published next Friday. And this book clearly shows the skills of these women. And it can therefore be considered as the product of a research action initiative in which women were able to showcase their own personal skills and expertise. So it can be used, therefore, by officials and decision makers in charge of employment issues. Of course, on the condition that they take into consideration the skills that are presented by these women and showcased by these women in this book, and of course matching those with the specific needs of the labor market. Another very important point in this source of information here are the statistics that this book contains. And as I said, this is a research action initiative where women were asked questions about values. We all know how important values are when it comes to living together, to communicating, to being part of one's society. And there are statistics in this book about the three main values held by these women. So that's very interesting. I'd also like to close by stating that this book also highlights behavioral skills. There's a whole chapter in this book dedicated to women's explanations of how they try to deal with some very tragic events in their lives, such as the loss of a child or disability, etc. So I thank you very much for giving you the floor. As I said, this book will be presented in Brussels next week. Anyone who is based in Brussels can come and meet these women who are members of the diaspora, who have skills, who are active, and who are not asking for... who are only seeking to contribute their skills to their host societies as well as to the societies of origin. Thank you.
Merci, Madame.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Moncasa. I'd like now to give the floor to Mr. Raymond Xeri, who's president of the European Togut.
Chair, thank you, Assembly. I'm representing the Europeans throughout the world, which is Europe's only and largest organization. We represent nearly 350 million Europeans living around the world, from Australia to Canada to any country in the world. This is an organization based in Brussels. We have a set of principles, a set of tasks in order to bring the issue of diaspora forth onto the European agenda. We've actually been proposing to have a convention for Europeans living around the world. So I think this would be a next step after this launching from the Council of Europe, which is an excellent initiative, and I congratulate the organizers, even the government of Portugal, the Council of Europe, and all those involved for this sterling initiative. It is very important that we recognize the importance, the fundamental importance of the diaspora, both in the host countries and in the sending countries. I thank you, Mr. Chair, for this for the time for intervening. We appeal to the European countries who do not have members in the Europeans throughout the world to contact us and put forth a representative so even their diasporas can be represented at our assembly. Thank you very much.
Merci, Monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. Xeri. I think that as there are a number of us here, your call will be heard. I'd like now to give the floor to Mr. Jamel Voyage, member of the National Council of Palestine. You have the floor, sir. If there are any further requests for the floor, I'll take your names down. You have the floor, sir. First, I'd like to say that I come from Palestine, which is the last country in this world still suffering from the Israeli occupation. I'd like to thank the Republic of Portugal and the Parliament of Portugal for addressing this very important issue. I'd like to thank the previous speakers and friends who spoke before me about the various means to address this issue. I don't want to repeat myself, but I know that our topic is very specific, but there's more than 6.5 million Palestinians living in diaspora and have been living around the world since the 40s, and this is due mainly to the Israeli occupation. And all of these migrants and diaspora members have played a pivotal role in rebuilding Palestine through investments and projects, through the various experts who have come to Palestine to rebuild it. And these diaspora Palestinian diaspora members have also contributed greatly in their host countries in Europe, in Arab countries, and all over the world. And that's why I'd like to emphasize a single point here at the Council of Europe. When we address diaspora issues, you need to address the issues within the countries of origin, whether it's xenophobic issues, conflicts, natural disasters were also occupation. So occupation, in fact, is one of the main drivers or causes of migration, and that's why we need to do away with occupations. And the Israeli occupation is the only occupation still occurring today. And so we, as Palestinians today, need to work with the rest of the world and with the Europeans. We know that many different migrants, and especially amongst Islamists, give a negative portrayal of Palestine. There are other migrants in around the world, and we need, I think, to address this issue of occupation. And we need a recognition of the Palestinian state. I'd like for there to be a recommendation to this effect from our meeting. Thank you.
Merci, Monsieur Wayed.
Thank you, Mr. Bouayed. I'd like to give the floor to Mr. Qais Yazadin, member of the Parliament of Jordan.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for this opportunity to be here today. I come from a country, Jordan, where by 30 to 35% of individuals and citizens who live in Jordan are immigrants. Immigrants by reason of war. I think initially that we have to look at the reasons behind immigration, especially in our part of the world. It's definitely not financial. I join my voice and to my colleague from Palestine by saying that, for example, the main reason of immigration that happened to Jordan was Palestinian immigration as a result of the Israeli occupation. This is one of the main reasons of immigration, for example, in Jordan. The second main reason for the immigration that has occurred by our Syrian brothers to Jordan was the war in Syria as well. So I think that we have to differentiate initially in the reasons of immigration and why they have occurred. In Europe, I understand maybe it's more financial. People seek to live a better life. In our part of the world, people are struggling and are fleeing from their original countries to our country, for example, either as a result of the Israeli occupation or as a result of the wars that occur in our part of the world. I think this is extremely important, a dialogue that we are having here. A balance is always required between integration of migrants with host communities and maintaining links with the countries of origin. This is why I think it is of utmost importance for us to take diaspora forth in countries such as Jordan, whereby we could strike a certain balance between people having their original links with their original countries and integrating with the Jordanian society and the societies of their host countries in the general sense. Again, I do condemn the Israeli occupation, and we do ask for this to be in the final declaration here as a main result of immigration that is happening of the Palestinian people around the world. Thank you very much.
Merci, Monsieur Yazadin.
Thank you, Mr. Yazadin. I'd like now to give the floor to Mrs. Amina Khalid, Vice President of the Young African Diaspora in Europe.
Good morning. Just a slight correction. I am a former president of ADIN, currently working for an international organization called Initiative of Change, active in 65 countries around the world, as well as an umbrella organization called Somali Initiatives for Democracy and Dialogue. First of all, I would like to say thank you so much for creating such an important space for a dialogue like this to take place today. There has never been a time when such topic has been more important. We see that we live in a world of uncertainty and human insecurity. I am a former refugee living in London currently. I left my home country 20 years ago. And everything that has been shared on this floor this morning is something that very much resonates and speaks to my heart. The experience of discrimination, marginalization, and disconnection between both the host and the respective countries has been one of my own. The direct racism at such an early stage in my life, when I was only 13, escaping from a country of war and civil conflict, and yet coming to a new country where I am seeking safe haven. My experience was so far from that. I really look forward to the board and the panel to create a space where you can actually hear the experience of those who have now left home. Nobody, there's a beautiful saying which goes along the line of nobody leaves home unless the home becomes the mouth of a shark. I have been forced to flee from my country, from the persecution and conflict. But today, I am very pleased to say that Great Britain has become a new home for me, and a home which I have contributed vastly to. And I look so forward to both working within the host and the respective countries, because I believe that it is the only way forward. But I think that with the new narrative of today, which of course our distinguished speaker called it toxic, is certainly very toxic. And the only way to change that, first of all, is to move away from regarding refugees as numbers and treating them as human beings, because respect comes from that. And acknowledging that no one can do this work on their own. We need to work together. But in order for that to happen, we also need to listen with our hearts.
Merci, Madame.
Thank you, Mrs. Khalid. I'd like now to give the floor to Mr. O'Brien, member of the Foreign Affairs Committee from the Republic of Ireland.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I very much welcome the opportunity to contribute here today. I would say from Ireland's perspective that Ireland has a diaspora of 70 million people across the world. It's the largest proportion in proportion to its home population, and that has been borne out by many previous speakers, such as from Palestine and from Jordan and others, mainly due to historic persecution, but also due for economic reasons. So in a country like America, 35 million people claim Irish heritage and Irish descent. I'm delighted to see Mr. Lacey Swing here today, and I'm sure in New York you'll know of many Irish that are there in Manhattan who've contributed in a positive way. And I was very taken by Mr. Swing's comments, particularly around the fact that migration has become a dirty word. And I would agree with him. And I think the EU has a major role to play there. And three quick things I would say is that the European Union needs to review its support for third country arrangements on migration. The deal with Turkey, a further deal with Libya, the situation, the conditions that migrants find themselves in trying to cross the Mediterranean. I understand for the southern Mediterranean countries there's pressure on them also, but Médecins Sans Frontières just today have launched a report in Brussels from the detention centres and their experience of the detention centres in Libya. So Europe itself, while needs to be a welcoming place, but needs to be a welcoming place by its actions as well. And I think we must be very careful when we enter into third country arrangements like the one that's being proposed with Afghanistan as well, that we look at the human rights records of those countries that we're entering into arrangements with, because that fundamentally is how people will actually see our bona fides as a European Union. I think furthermore a big challenge facing us is displaced citizens within our own European Union, and it was mentioned by the Speaker of the Parliament, the President of the Portuguese Parliament, in relation to the challenges that Brexit will pose. Post-Brexit, we will have in all our home EU states, in Ireland in particular, we will have the largest number of EU citizens outside of the European Union in the north of Ireland. We'll have met out, spoke to a colleague from Poland. Portugal is the same situation with a large diaspora in Britain. And we've got to make sure that those, our citizens and our colleagues' rights are actually upheld by the British as well, because the sense coming from Britain at the moment is they're looking to not reciprocate in full those rights for EU citizens residing in Britain, and they're trying to create another level or another status of citizenship. So I do think really we need to, diaspora, it's really important that we're focusing on it. Certainly in my own country we hold the diaspora in high regard, and I'll conclude on this, Cathaoirleagh, is that I would say that in Ireland our new communities and the immigrants from across the European Union and from abroad that make up over 10% of our population have contributed extremely positively to our country and the diversity and the wealth of diversity in our country. So, Garamaga, thank you.
Merci, Monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. I'd like to give the floor to Mr. Moody from the Parliament of Morocco.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to extend my heartfelt thanks to those who instigated this initiative, this idea of a network on a crucially important topic to us all. And I must say, I was very pleased with what I heard from the various speakers this morning. This is a topic that's of importance not only for southern countries, the countries of origin, but there's also north-north migration and south-south migration. We're all concerned about these humanitarian movements or needs that we need to pay particular attention to. There are issues of integration, obviously, and I think it would have been useful to have amongst our speakers some experts from countries of origin or transit countries which are currently witnessing the departure or the immigration of these migrants, and in some cases their return. And so in future meetings, I believe it would be interesting to hear another side of the story. I think this could only be beneficial and enriching to our discussion. The various questions and issues addressed this morning are, of course, very important. And I must say that I'm very attached to the idea that migration is positive, that it needs to be seen as positive. I myself am a mayor of a small town in Morocco, which has a substantial migrant community in Spain and in Italy. And so I visit them quite regularly. They contribute very actively to GDP, and however they're faced with obstacles in integrating the social, cultural, and political lives in their host societies. Of course, we cannot deny the very positive impact that they have in our own country, the financial benefits, the remittances that come from these communities, and so they're very beneficial to our country of origin. I hope we will have the time and opportunity to discuss the real experiences that we are all going through. Thank you once again. This is a highly important topic, and the speakers we heard this morning, in fact, really give me a lot of hope that we will be seeing this in a more positive light in the future. Thank you very much, Mr. Moubdi. Are there any other requests for the floor? Yes? Mr. Talat, any others? Very well, Mr. Talat, a member of the Parliament of Egypt, you have the floor, sir. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, first of all, for the kind invitation. I'd like to say that in Egypt, We are very interested in diaspora members. We have, in fact, a ministry for migrants. We have a diplomatic representative of them as well. They're represented in our parliament. They have 8 seats, but we know how challenging the issues are, of course. The current situation in Libya and Iraq, for instance, are very difficult. There are some 5 million workers, Egyptian workers in Libya in the past, in Iraq as well. And so Egyptian workers, in fact, send back some 19 billion Egyptian pounds to our country on a yearly basis. But what I'd like to emphasize is that there will be many substantial challenges in the future period, which will impact us all. We are seeing decline in the growth rates in countries of origin, and this will lead to even greater difficulties. More and more people will need to immigrate to find new opportunities, and so all of those who reject the right to education, to expression, to migrants will only be these issues will only be compounded, and so with the rise in the number of migrants. So we would like, therefore, for these growth, so we need to rather keep in mind this issue of declining growth rates in countries of origin. Technological advances as well have also complicated some matters. There have been substantial impacts on the second generations and further generations. And so I'd like possibly to ask this meeting or this conference to think about maybe establishing links between the migrants themselves, the country of origin, and the country or the host country or country of residence. I think that it's important to build these ties. I'd like to join my voice to the representative from Palestine as well as from Jordan. We strongly condemn the Israeli occupation, which has led to mass migrations of Palestinian brothers and sisters. And so we condemn this occupation. It's up to us all to try to find a solution. And I hope that one of the recommendations of this meeting will be to attempt to address the occupation issue. Thank you.
Merci, Monsieur Talat.
Thank you, Mr. Talat. Are there any other requests for the floor?
Non? Monsieur Couscous, c'est ça?
Mr. Couscous, is that correct? A member of the Moroccan Parliament? You have the floor.
Shukran, Sid Rais.
Thank you, Chair. First, I would like to extend my thanks to the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe for organizing this conference. This is a great opportunity to bolster North-South dialogue on a very strategic issue. This is an issue that requires ongoing and sustained dialogue, the issue of diasporas, of course. As my colleague in the House of Representatives of Morocco emphasized, it's important to share our experiences. And in fact, I would like to share some of the practices that we have developed in my country, Morocco, some of the initiatives that we have adopted to encourage the participation of our diaspora. The Constitution of 2011 in Morocco enshrines the rights of Moroccans living abroad, the rights to effective democratic participation. There's some 5 articles or chapters relating to this. The government has also attempted to adopt various legislative regulations to to implement the spirit of the Constitution. So a number of different initiatives and strategies have been adopted for these Moroccans living abroad. As the previous colleague said, we have strategies that are led by a ministry specifically focused with Moroccans living abroad and diaspora. So I won't go into the details of the strategy and the 14 different points that it contains. Rather, I simply would like to emphasize that the Moroccans living abroad, our diaspora, is very present and it is very active in the decision-making, both from a legislative perspective, but also when it comes to the drafting of policy in our countries. There's a number of constitutional bodies as well as the Director General mentioned earlier. There are a number of constitutional bodies that also contribute to the participation of our diasporas, of which the Parliament, of course, the National Council on Human Rights, the Social, Economic, and Environmental Council of Morocco. There are also a number of political parties in Morocco which have established bridges, direct bridges with Moroccans living abroad. So what I wanted to highlight really is to present some of the institutional experiments that we have had in this area. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Gamito Antonio, North-South Center of the Council of Europe. Mr. Gamito, you have the floor.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Rouki. Comme je suis national.
Thank you very much. I will speak in Portuguese because I'm a Portuguese national, if you do not mind. I would, without further ado, like to begin by thanking the Portuguese Parliament and the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe for having organized this launching of the Parliamentary Network on Diaspora Policies. Portugal, of course, is a country with a long, long history, sometimes successful in this regard. I, as a Portuguese citizen and as executive director of the North-South Centre of the Council of Europe here in Lisbon, I'm very proud of our efforts in this field. I would also like to say the following. This is work that is global in nature. Mr. Lacey Swing of the International Organization for Migration pointed the way forward. I concur wholeheartedly with what he said. He spoke of the three E's, enable, enhance, and empower. And in the North-South Center, as far as possible, we try our utmost to do just that through mechanisms that promote advocacy and awareness raising. And that, however, is not enough. We need to do more. I would very much like this conference not to focus only on Europe, because migrations are not just from south towards the north. We have north to south and also south to south. And therefore, I think we should not forget those other flows in this debate. Looking at things a little differently, and perhaps Mr. Lacey Swing can confirm this, the numbers for migratory flows, south-south flows, are higher than south-north flows. And so this parliamentary network, which began in the Council of Europe, is very important because it can bring together other parliamentary networks. And the Special Representative for the Council of Europe is working really hard on these matters as Representative of the Secretary General. I think we need to focus also on unaccompanied minors. Migrations are not just caused by war or by health issues and economic issues, lack of social integration. There are, of course, serious impacts, serious consequences. One of those has to do with unaccompanied minors. And we are also, through advocacy and awareness raising, drawing attention to the issue of unaccompanied minors, which is why last year Laura Papa, who is Greek and is in the Metagrassi NGO, received a North-South Prize of the Council of Europe, in this very room, in fact, from the President of the Portuguese Republic. I would finally just also like to say something to all MPs represented here today from Europe, from the Mediterranean, from Africa. It is very important that you are here. The North-South Center of the Council of Europe sees this situation as an important one. And we believe that the work of parliaments is essential. It's crucial if we are to resolve this problem, which will continue in the next few years. As Mr. Lacey Swing also said, let us not forget that through parliamentary networks, that through bottom-up approaches in civil society, we can help resolve this problem. Thank you all for your attention.
Merci, Monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. Gamito, Madame Cavallo-Lionetta, President of the National Greek Delegation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you've said, I come from Greece, and regarding the refugee and migration issue, I will not get tired of reminding that both phenomena are here to stay. They have already become a permanent situation that we need to deal with humanely and with compassion, that derive from union law, regulations, and international conventions, not by choice, but by principle. Dear colleagues, the EU, among others, provided war material in the Middle East, and the refugees and migrants were the result of the subsequent war. It is common ground, I hope by now, that Greece, my country, did more than her fair share to cope with the problem due to its geography, but mostly due to the determination of its government and solidarity of its people. However, a country that happens to be in a deep financial crisis for more than 7 years now cannot fulfill such a tremendous task by itself. And all effort is futile since these people won't be given the opportunity to travel to their country of choice and are blocked in Greece instead. The renounced EU-Turkey agreement has not been functional from the start since the relocation resettlement clause was never truly activated. However, instead of learning from our mistakes, I'm afraid we are determined to upgrade them. During the latest mini-Euro-African summit regarding the refugee crisis, the course of action decided was a clear turn for the worse. Camps located in African countries where union law does not apply. Refugees and migrants are to be held in camps in Nigeria, Libya, and Chad. The segregation amongst refugees and migrants will take place there. As German Chancellor Angela Merkel admitted, the main goal is to block migrant flows in Africa permanently and to make more agreements like the EU-Turkey one with the three aforementioned African countries. There was also content amongst the summit participants because discussion practices were successful and flows diminished. UNHCR and numerous NGOs are already condemning the developments, and both them and Chancellor Merkel admit that the situation in the Libyan camps has already become inhumane. However, the individual coordination between Italian officials and the Libyan Coast Guard is progressing in hindering migrant flows in the Mediterranean. Those grim developments are the subsequent and inevitable, as it seems, future to an already bad present. These decisions are certainly fabled in legal substantiation. They are not aligned with basic human rights agenda, the principles and ideals of the French Revolution, everything that marked Europe as the guard of individual rights, tolerance towards difference and social solidarity. Neoliberalism is sadly setting the agenda in social issues in the EU as we speak. We realize the difficulties, financial and others, but we are not convinced that another course of action is not possible. We need to see in fact-finding missions exactly what are the living conditions of refugees and migrants in the African camps. We need to check the legitimacy of whole venture. and we need to take up initiatives in order to see if and how the Assembly can support the rights of these people in the field. Thank you very much.
Bien, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you very much. Let me now give the floor to Mr. Oussala of the Algerian Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Salam ala Rasul.
I would like to say a few words following these statements from my colleagues from Jordan, Egypt, as well as my neighbors here in the room, as well the Moroccans. That is to say, the importance of hearing the voices of countries of origin, transit countries. I'd also, of course, like to recognize my colleague from Palestine and join my voice in condemning the Israeli occupation of Palestine. I'd like to also emphasize that the history of humanity shows that the denial of justice of human rights has also led Israel to migrations from countries of origin. So very briefly, I'd also like to touch upon some of the points made by the excellent speech presented by the Director General of the International Organization for Migration. He presented the policies and initiatives aimed at promoting ties with diasporas. And to echo what my Moroccan colleague said, we'd like also to share our own experiences, some of the experiences of our own institutions. I think it would be constructive to have more of an opportunity to do so. But hopefully there will be more of an opportunity, as I said, to describe what Algeria has done, for instance, in the fields of a higher education, in training and tapping into the resources of some of the experts and some of the those who are members of the diaspora. It's important to capture these brains and bring them back to so that they can serve their country's country of origin. From a policy perspective as well, Algeria has, we have representation of our diaspora within our lower chamber of parliament, and this is an opportunity for them to make their voices heard in the countries of origin. As the Director General of the IOM mentioned, with the constitutional changes announced in 2016, Article 27, in fact, of this constitution states that the government has obligation towards members of the diaspora, and the state must therefore also safeguard the identity of these diaspora members and encourage their contribution to the development of their country of origin. Algeria, therefore, is very interested in having its diaspora contribute to the development of the country. But despite this, and unfortunately I don't have much time here, but one of the challenges that we are trying to address here is how do we make sure that these members of the diaspora can be citizens of two countries, countries of their host country, country of residence, as well as citizens of their countries of origin. This, in fact, refers to our understanding of what citizenship is. Citizenship has become a very flexible concept. It's a concept of belonging, but also a concept of being a rights holder, an obligation to be so entitled to some rights, but also an obligation. So this is another important aspect to address, and this is an excellent opportunity to start addressing these issues. I'd like to thank you all for this excellent initiative, of course, thank the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, as well as the Portuguese Parliament for the very warm welcome extended to us. Thank you.
Merci, monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. Ursula. And now the floor goes to Mr. Marques, Portuguese Parliament.
I will speak in Portuguese, as we are in Portugal.
First and foremost, I'd like to welcome everyone. I am a member of the delegation to the Parliamentary Assembly, so let me welcome all the colleagues from all around the world. I would also like to congratulate the Committee on Migrations and also the Portuguese Parliament for having organized this launch so very well. I was listening to everyone and was just remembering that in most of the debates in the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, and very recently I presented a report on the refugee crisis with a collaboration from Mrs. Cavalier, and she contributed greatly to this. But as I was saying, I think we're in agreement when it comes to about 95% of the issues to do with refugees, the ways in which we can reduce humanitarian impacts and deal with problems that affect refugees so that refugees can integrate, so that they can return safely to their countries and also help those countries so that they can produce less refugees. So we need to go to the heart of the matter in the countries of origin, helping them resolve their problems. I think we're all in agreement that the solutions in the countries of origin and also in the host societies have been analyzed by us. We agree with about 90% of the solutions proposed. But I think that the aim of this meeting, the aim of this platform, the main aim, is to place on an equal footing the MPs elected by the diaspora and the representatives, NGOs, and MPs elected by national parliaments. That's why we are here. The diagnosis is done, with all due respect. I think we now need to give the representatives of the diasporas a voice so that MPs can hear them, so that they can give us suggestions on how to improve their integration. That is why we have this platform. That is why we have this conference. That is why we have this initiative. It's only worthwhile if we have this as our aim. We've heard everyone repeat the same things ad nauseam. It's time to realize the diagnosis has been made. We have to see how this platform can now improve the situation of the representatives of the diaspora in Portugal and in other countries so that they can help integrate their fellow citizens in the countries that host them, so that they can have a voice as representatives of immigrants, refugees, and displaced persons. I hope you understand this request of mine. I was listening to what was being said here, and I was just thinking, I hope that this conference won't just be a repeat of more of the same. We've done this hundreds of times before. Let's collaborate more. Let's use the fact that there's so many representatives here today to improve the way in which we welcome these people. Thank you.
Merci, Monsieur Marques.
Thank you, Mr. Marques. I think we're going to close the list of speakers. I just have one more request for the floor. Are there any further? This is the last chance for people to indicate they would like to speak, and then I'll give the floor back to the top table, Mr. Munyama, and then the lady over there. Mr. Munyama, you have the floor.
Thank you very much for the floor, the chairperson, and I'm an MP from Poland, and I would like to share a few experiences over what the diaspora has done so far. What has been mentioned so far is the fact that, you know, the movement of people is, you know, from many different parts of the world to the other parts of the world. It can be from south to south, it can be from south to north, it can be from east to west. As Poles, there are so many of us in the United Kingdom today. There are so many of us in Ireland. There's a lot of Polish people living in other European Union countries. But at the same time, we've got a lot of Ukrainians living in Poland, almost a million. So the movement is actually a steady force. But as my colleague Marcus has mentioned, we have to find a common ground, a common level in which we're going to, common denomination, in order to resolve the problems of the diaspora today. Experiences of many parliaments of different parts of the world are different. We have to learn from each other. We have to give lessons to those that haven't had any experience of that nature. We are in Poland. We have got a small group of the African diaspora, which has made an impact on the relationship between Poland and Africa today. We have played a very big role in the Go Africa program that is going on within Poland in order to allow the entry, or rather to increase the cooperation both economically, politically, and socially between Poland and African countries. So I would like to emphasize the fact that we need to learn about the experience, especially of Portugal, in as far as the relationship between the diaspora and the Parliament of Portugal has been done. So in this particular conference, I believe that we'll be in a position to share a lot of issues that are of importance, as well as to be able to implement issues of importance. I fully agree with the delegation from Palestine, from Jordan, mentioning the fact that, you know, the problem of the occupation of Palestine is actually one of those big issues that need to be resolved. We have the war in Syria as well, which is a big impact on the movement of the people. So I look forward to a very effective and concrete solutions to the problem of the diaspora and the way it operates in this conference. Thank you so much.
Merci, Monsieur.
Thank you, Mr. Munyama. And now I give the floor to Mrs. Baroku, Director General of the World Platform for Syrian Refugees. You have the floor. You're the last speaker on the list.
As the previous Portuguese speakers, I will switch into Portuguese. Muito obrigada pelo.
Thank you very much for granting me this opportunity to speak. I am one of the other participants, so I'm not sure if I actually should be speaking, but thank you for giving me the floor. I want to talk to you about an initiative, the Portuguese initiative in 2013. This is something we've been implementing. It's an example of good practice and in integration policy, integrating, in this case, refugees and people in emergency situations. And I'm talking about the emergency scholarships program for Syrian students. This is an initiative launched by us. It's a pioneer initiative, as far as I know. We have tried to broaden its scope. So last year, during the Refugee and Migrant Summit of the UN, it was on the 19th of September, we did our utmost to allow access of refugees and mobile students to higher education. We wanted to enshrine it in the New York Declaration. We managed a paragraph 82, and what we are now doing is developing a vaster project which seeks to find a sustainable and systemic approach to granting access to higher education in emergency situations. I'm talking about the creation of a rapid response mechanism for higher education in emergencies. I won't go into too much detail on it, but if you're interested in knowing more, if you would like to join us in this effort, in this project, I would be more than happy to give you further information on it. You will also be able to find explanations on our website, www.globalplatformforsyrianstudents.org. Thank you.
Merci, Madame Baroku.
Thank you, Mrs. Baroku. Director General, you have the floor. A lot was said about your opening words. Would you like to use the floor now?
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President. I'm afraid that my wife were here, she would accuse me of wanting to have the last word, which I never do. But no, I've listened with a lot of interest and engagement to very rich range of interventions here. And it's very encouraging, even inspiring, I think, to say that so many of you, whether you're parliamentarians or NGOs or otherwise, to see this engagement on what I think is one of the critical issues of our time. I sort of captured, there was a lot there. I tried to, again, using my idea of having 3 points, I tried to group it under 3 points. I think the first thing that emerges from this is that a recognition that there is not enough shared sense of shared responsibility among us all, and the key role that parliaments can play in creating that sense of shared responsibility. If you take our colleagues who've spoken today, for example, take the four neighbors of Syria, water-poor Jordan is hosting nearly 1.5 million or so Syrian refugees. Lebanon, with a population of 4.5 million, has 1.5 million Syrians at last count, plus 500, our colleague from Palestine, 500,000 Palestinians who've been in Lebanon for many, many years. So they've got roughly 2 million refugees in a population of 4.5 million. And I think that's very important in terms of perspective. All six neighbors of Libya, after the fall of President Gaddafi in February 2011, all six neighbors kept their doors open at great economic cost to their country because there was that sense of shared responsibility. And you can argue, well, it's because they all speak the same language, et cetera, same culture and so on. But nonetheless, they took on the responsibility that was required. So it's important to keep that, I think, in perspective as we move forward. I think of my last two visits to Libya, one just about 4 weeks ago, the 31 or more detention centers there, horrific conditions, and we're all trying to help the government to build the capacity to address that situation. We have 200 staff inside Libya trying to upgrade the detention facilities, trying to convert them into open reception centers where separating the men and the women so there's a greater humane conditions there. But that sense of shared responsibility is extremely important, and that's really what this Global Compact on Migration is all about that was agreed we would negotiate this last September 19 in New York. We think that this is our best chance ever to get some attention for those people who are not qualified under the 1951 Refugee Convention or the Stateless Persons Convention. There are just an awful lot of people on the move who are vulnerable. You know yourself by movement. When you're on the move, you are prone to vulnerability, whether it's language, whether it's an accident along the way or whatever. And that's my second point, that if I look at the world today, one of the realities that confronts me head on is youth unemployment. Absolutely enormous in the developing parts of the world, particularly in Africa, with enormous growth rates, an aging Europe with more people dying than being born and those remaining getting older and tax bases shrinking and jobs availability growing. So we've got to do something, and I think the Global Compact would help us in this regard. Victims of trafficking. We've assisted and brought home more than 90,000 victims of trafficking in the last few years. The sick and the elderly, the many economic migrants along the way. And I can tell you that in those detention centers in Libya, the vast majority are economic migrants, young people basically looking for work. So we need to be a lot more creative in our consular and visa policies. We have the World Trade Organization down the street from our headquarters in Geneva, all about the free flow of capital, goods, and services. Something missing. The people who make that happen. There is no, and I'm not talking about open borders, but we have not really adapted our consular and visa policies to the new realities of our time. We can be more creative. Temporary protective status until the situation gets better, then you go home. Temporary student visas, temporary work permits, all kinds of things that could be done. So I think this is why this conference is very exciting, because you have a chance to stretch our minds further and see what more that we could possibly do to help there. And now, of course, you have a new element that linked in the public mind now to migration is terrorism. Every tourist a potential terrorist. And that makes the atmosphere even more toxic. So we have a lot of work to do in all of these particular areas. I guess the third point would be that there's a lot of talk about integration versus marginalization. And several of you have made the point that you can be both fully integrated and also be an active member of the diaspora. And that's really, that is the magic formula when you serve host and home societies. That links the world up in a way that it should be. The whole program of return of qualified nationals, we've taken 150 Somali nationals back to Somalia to help build the capacity of government and develop the private sector. We've done it in 35 or 40 countries. We need to do a lot more of that. Since a lot of the focus is on Europe, understandably, what I find missing, and I'm very much in praise of what the European Commissioners and European Council are trying to do, I think you've got three basic challenges, not meaning to single out for criticism Europe, but number one, you don't have a migrant crisis so much as a political crisis. The 1.5 million people who came north in 2015, 2016, compared to the 1.5 million in Lebanon, you have a population of 550 million, should have been a manageable situation and not been a crisis. But in point of fact, when the federal chancellor said, "Wir schaffen das," that we can do it, she must have assumed that some of the other 27 countries would follow, and only a couple did, and not for very long. So the political disunion right now becomes part of the problem. And I'm not one to single it out, because all 28 member states of the European Union are members of IOM, and we work closely with all of them, as well as we have a very strategic partnership with the European Union. I just signed an agreement, 200 million euros, in the 15th of December with Mrs. Mogherini to build these way stations throughout West Africa from Senegal to Cameroon, like the one we have in Agadez in Niger, to try to help migrants along the way and encourage them not to let themselves go into the hands of smugglers. The second area is what I call, or what actually Javier Solana calls, refugee amnesia, that we've forgotten. My organization, IOM, which many or most of you are members, was founded in 1951 to take European refugees to safe shores and new lives. But today, we've sort of forgotten that. Hungary sent 200,000 Hungarians fled to Austria and Yugoslavia 61 years ago to open arms and open purses and all of that. And then the third thing, of course, the third area of challenge for, I think, for Europe is to what I call a psychological adjustment. Having peopled the world for three centuries, both colonies and multinational corporations, a continent of origin has now become a continent of destination because of the demographic imbalances. And that's a psychological adjustment. Basically, I want to say, how do we manage this? Because it's going to be a reality anyway. But I apologize. It's hard to make a short speech.
No, no, merci.
No, not at all. Thank you very much, Director General. I'd also like to thank all of those who expressed themselves this morning in this debate, which is a very rich debate. We will continue the debate, of course, throughout the day. I think we can now ask the members of the two subcommittees who were to meet at 3 to please be here at 2:30 for their meeting. And so at 2:30, the members of the two subcommittees will be meeting in this room. We have been invited to lunch by the Assembly of the Republic, the Parliament of Portugal. And in order to go to the lunch hall, we will have to follow a protocol. They will help us get there safely so we don't get lost in the corridors. I hope you all enjoy your lunch, and we'll see you back here at 3 p.m. this afternoon. Thank you.
On va vous suivre. Ah, merci beaucoup. C'est gentil.
Oh, c'est brillant.